Eric Stevens joins us from the Orange County Register. Eric, welcome back to the show. Who do you see as the opening night goaltender for the Ducks?
Well, I'll tell you what, Jason. It's a good question. Obviously, it's an open-ended one that they're going to have to settle in camp there. I've got to think that I think it's going to be a spirited battle because you would tend to think, and most people tend to think that it's John Gibson's job to lose, and perhaps it may as well be so. But you can't discount what Freddie Anderson did in his rookie year and going in 20-5 and posting really good goals against and save percentage numbers over his first season. I don't think you really discount what he brings to the table. So I think it's going to be a real spirit of competition. But hey, look, make no mistake. It was John Gibson in net for the back end of that playoff series against the Kings. Obviously, Anderson was hurt and dealing with an injury, but Bruce Boudreau showed the confidence in Gibson then. So I can't see why he wouldn't show confidence in him now as we go ahead to training camp and the opening of the season.
You know, Jonas Hiller's numbers, I was looking at them, they've dropped the last 3 years down to around about 910, whereas the previous 3 years he was at 921. Is this a guy who just the vertigo and the hip injuries is somebody who's maybe never going to get back to that level of being a 920 save percentage guy?
Oh, you know what? Certainly there's been a body of work since then, since that sort of ill-fated 2011 year, which ironically came after he probably played some of the best hockey of his career before that occurred. Who knows if he was going to be over that guy over the long term, or maybe that was just him at his peak and the unfortunate illness or whatsoever, occurred and then him having to try to battle back from that. You know, Jonas Hiller is obviously a quality goalie. At times, he has been, someone that can be obviously a number one that can hold that position down. You know, inconsistency I think has been the thing that has sort of bugged him in the years since coming back from that vertigo. And he's insisted all along that has not impacted his performance since then, but. There's that inconsistency and, the way he finished last season and why, Bruce lost faith in him down the stretch, that's what has kept him from becoming an elite netminder.
Some off-season acquisitions in Anaheim, we'll get to those in a sec, but I've heard some rumblings in regards to Sheldon Surrey that his wrist has just not responded, Eric, and potentially might be contemplating retirement. What are you hearing?
Yeah, it's not, nothing's been made official, at least nothing, from Sheldon has been made official. But yeah, certainly been hearing the same thing over the summer. I think it's fair to say that the Ducks aren't counting on him. Again, at the time of that injury and the time of that surgery, he was dealing with an arthritic condition in that wrist, and to play in the NHL, but to play his position and all that. That really is just a tough injury to deal with, and put it this way, all the signs are there that. Sheldon's playing days, could be near an end if not ended. Again, nothing's been made official, but, I don't think the Ducks are really, counting on his services heading into the year.
I guess the reason he won't retire is similar probably to the Chris Pronger one, right? Because he would count then against the cap and so likely has an agreement with the Ducks not to retire until his contract expires.
Yeah, I think there is sort of whether spoken or unspoken, I think there is definitely that thing. I mean, the Ducks are I've asked about this, and the Ducks have been seemingly on board and okay with him and his salary you know, counting if, you know, if he indeed, you know, does not retire, you know, and, you know, this will be the last year of his deal. Again, they've seemingly been on board with that or have had no qualms or issues with it. So, yeah, I think it's logical to say that, you know, spoken or unspoken, there's been an agreement to, you know, keep him on board even if he doesn't play a single game.
Up front, Danny Heatley, what does he have left? Where do you think he'd play?
Well, I'd say what, it appears that he's going to get an honest-to-goodness shot to play alongside Getzlaff and Perry there on that top line. You know, he's not the Danny Heatley of, 2006, 2007, you know, or even a couple years after that, but... you know, the Ducks view this as a low risk gamble. To bring in a guy who's a proven goal scorer, and you know, from all accounts, still has a hand. Maybe not fleet of foot, but then again, Getzlaff and Perry aren't exactly you know speedsters as well. Their game is a power game, and if Danny can slide in there and sort of feed off of, passes from the two of them, especially Getzlaff, and put some goals in, they'll certainly be, happy with that. So, they need somebody to fill that spot long term. It's been a revolving door ever since Bobby Ryan left, and even then, those three weren't always together, so... they can use somebody there that can fill that spot, and ultimately they were disappointed, sort of disappointed in what Dustin Penner brought last year. Danny's going to get a shot there, and we'll see how it goes from there.
We all know that Perry and Getzlaff are going to play together. Who do you think will get the best opportunity to play with them, and then who do you see skating on the side of Ryan Kesler?
Yeah, first things first, like I said, we guess up. I think Danny Healy's going to get an on
long term though. Really,
shot.
You think long term?
Well, no. Okay. And you know what? When you're dealing with Bruce Boudreau, he rotates, he changes lines up like he changes lines up like someone changing their underwear whatsoever each day. I mean, it'll go 5 minutes, and then if something's not working, he'll move somebody in. Devontae Smith-Pelly, he obviously performed well in the playoffs there, had 5 goals when he was moved into that slot. So I could see where if Healy doesn't work, Smith-Pelly could certainly get a shot there on that top line. I think they want, certainly somebody with size, to go up there and play with those two. And then, with Kesler, you could see where, maybe on his right side, maybe a Kyle Palmieri, who will now slide into the spot, vacated by the retired Timu Solani. This should be his best shot at getting, logging a lot of ice time and showcasing his offensive abilities. And possibly somebody like a Pat Maroon. I mean, mm-hmm. he's been sort of an underrated guy that no one talks about, but he, sort of finally, he's a late bloomer that kind of came of age last year and chipped in, and he can sort of be the big body on that line. So, I can see where, both guys are possibilities, but, you've got young guys like Stoverberg or Emerson Edom or whatsoever, they've got a number of forwards that they can move in and out to see who clicks with both Kesler and Getzlaff.
Eric Stevens joins us from Anaheim. Eric, even with the injury to Sheldon Surrey, they still have 8 defensemen. Cam Fowler, Boschman, Allen, Stoner, Fistrick, Vatanen, Lovejoy, and Hampus Lindholm. I was a little surprised at the amount of money and the term they gave for Clayton Stoner when they had Mark Fistrick. So which of those two do you not see in the starting six, and do you think there's one of them they would put on the trade block?
Well, I'll tell you what, you're not the only one that was surprised. I count myself and I think many, many others with the amount of dollars and years that were committed to or doled out to Clayton Stoner there. You have to believe, for one, that, if they sign him to that much, that he's going to be inserted into their mix there. I would find it hard to believe You know, unless he completely falls on his face in camp whatsoever, that they're you know, one of their big free agent acquisition is going to be sitting out on opening night. You know, Mark Fistrick, I mean, he's, you know, he's a guy. I mean, they re-signed him. They like what he brings. You know, he's a guy that's you know, has pretty much accepted his role as a, say, a sixth or a seven who can come in when needed. So, you know, certainly he could be a guy that you know, could be put in reserve there. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a veteran like Brian Allen, I mean, he's got the size, you know, that they want. I mean, he's one of the few that have real size there on that blue line. But, you know, they want Sammy Vatanen to play. He offers a skill set, and, you know, like you said, some of those analytics numbers, puck possession numbers, that Brian Allen doesn't bring. And, you know, I think that they're going to give him a larger role. So, you know, Fistrick and maybe, you know, Allen, unless they want his size in the lineup, you know, could be the guys that sort of are the odd men out when you go into that opener.
Yeah, that's interesting. Allen has 1 year left on his deal at $3.5 million. And when you have Stoner and Fistrick, you definitely would. They're all kind of three similar type guys, right? So you could see maybe that's someone. I don't know if anybody wants to take him at 3.5, but maybe that's someone the Ducks are looking at moving.
Well, you know, that's one, you know, like I said, that's a logical, you know, look at it. Like I say, he's in the final year of his deal, you know, there. But, you know, again, yeah, they have Fistrick, they have Stoner, so maybe Stoner sort of cancels Allen out, say, a little bit. But, you know, again, that's 3.5. That's, you know, that's not a little change there. That's a pretty big salary that, you know, maybe not teams may not be necessarily wanting to take, take on early on. So, you know, but Bob Murray's been a guy, though, that, I mean, he wants eight NHL defensemen. He's typically been that way. And he's fine with, you know, someone having, you know, one or two guys having to sit out. You know, it could lead to, you know, grumbling or whatsoever. But, you know, he's a guy, he's a big believer in having a plethora of defensemen to go through an entire season.
Well, you need a lot of them nowadays to compete, right? A lot of the good teams want, you know, veteran guys, and, you know, maybe they look at trying to squeeze one of them through waivers. Now, I think Lindholm's the only one right now who wouldn't qualify for waivers, but I don't see any chance him not starting the season in Anaheim. Do you?
Hampus Lindholm will be in the lineup on October 9th in Pittsburgh. This is a guy who, you know, I think in time, if he continues on his upward arc there, I mean, he's already one of their best defensemen. Whether that says a lot or not, who knows? But he already is, and he's a guy that could be a top pairing guy in a couple of years. So I can't see where in any scenario where he wouldn't be with the team unless he's injured.
Speaking of his development, also Cam Fowler, who I remember, you know, he dropped down to 12 for Anaheim. They took him. He came right into the NHL. I know he had a late birthday, so it was kind of like a 19-year-old. But, man, this guy's just gotten better and better and better, Eric. Where do you see the, you know, the top-end potential of Cam Fowler? Who does he remind you of?
Wow, that's a really good question. You know, he obviously drew a little bit of comparison, and let's qualify this by, I mean, these are very loose comparisons, but to, you know, to Scott Niedermayer, obviously with the Anaheim connection, but his skating, his ability to move effortlessly up and down the ice, and his puck moving. I mean, he certainly isn't Scott Niedermayer and won't be. You know, that's one, and I think, you know, a lot of people forget. I mean, he's only 22. He's only 22. He took that necessary step forward that he needed to take last year. He especially improved on the defensive side of the game. He's never going to be the big hitter or so. That's just not his game. That's not what he does. But positionally wise, reads wise, he improved greatly. And, you know, I think it's still possible that he could develop into a number one, you know, or if they're worth a number two, and that's not bad either. Number one defensemen are hard to find in this league. You know, obviously you know that, and nobody trades them when they have them. So, they feel like they've got a guy that they can rely on that's still developing into that. And defensemen usually, hey, we know defensemen usually take longer. So, expect for him to be at or near, reaching his peak in the coming years.
Eric Stevens joins us. Eric, one last one. Any surprise players coming into Ducks camp that you think have a chance of cracking the lineup?
I think one guy to, maybe sort of look at, I mentioned too, I mean, Ricard Raquel is a guy that they took in the first round in 2011. He came up a little bit last year and then played some playoff games, played in the series against Dallas and scored a goal there. He's a young Swede who plays a real effective two-way game. Now there's questions about his upside or whatsoever, but with Saku Koivu no longer there, and Nick Bonino traded, there may be a slot there at the number three or number four center position. Obviously they brought in Nate Thompson who will fill one of those two roles, but Raquel is a guy that could with a good camp maybe slide in there. And I think Emerson Edom, this is his time where I think he needs to take that step forward and show that he can become an everyday NHL player. And Smith, Devontae Smith-Elly, same with him. This is his time to do so as well. So, they're going to need young guys like that to take that next step forward, not just be a guy who's made the NHL. Or whatsoever, but a guy who can be an everyday player and a consistent contributor. So I can see where, those among those three that, they could find themselves, on the team perhaps on opening night.
Should be interesting to see where the Ducks land in the West. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jason.